Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. In today's show, we ended up with a very focused discussion, and I thought about this in terms of information for white Americans. And I think that there are some important things that come out of this show and this discussion. On other shows, we've wandered across wider spectrums when we are talking. But in this one, we are much more focused. And we are focused as a result of our roving journalist. Our roving journalist, Mike, who's always sneaking around somewhere, ended up telling us some things he discovered in a foreign state known as the Jewish Bolshevik Soviet Republic of California. So he exited America and he went to this foreign land that is populated by lots and lots of filthy Jews and all kinds of human trash. And he describes a number of things that he saw there. And I think that the stuff that came out of his personal discussions with a quotes migrant, which I should translate as another member of the human pigsty that is heading to America to create problems for you people there. Mike spoke to a, quotes, migrant, a recent migrant, about how it was that he got into America. And it's a very interesting story. But there are a bunch of things that we discussed that I just want to add a little bit more onto, because even after the show, we were sitting and chatting a little bit, and I felt that a lot of what we chatted about after the show should actually have been in the show. Because once our fire was lit, we carried on, and it was good stuff. For me, the whole story of how these migrants get into America is something that's very foreign to me, and I find it very, very interesting and bizarre how this stuff is going on. Brandt dived in and saved the day by giving us a map, and the map that Brandt provided is the one that you see on the screen. And it is the trail of non-white garbage heading to America by way of the, quotes, Hebrew Immigrant Society. It's actually HIAS. It actually stands for Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. They claim that this thing has been around for a long time, assisting Jews to flee from pogroms. And in reality, we need to maybe explain that this is just an organization that has allowed Jews to escape from justice in other countries. To escape from justice in Russia, justice in Germany, etc. And it seems that they started this thing in the time of Russia when the Tsar still existed and the Russian royal family were trying to keep control of their state. Basically, the last time that Russia was properly ruled by proper whites. When I look at the history of some of these things, I must tell you that I think there's lots and lots of these things that need to be outlawed. This Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society should itself be made illegal, because it's basically an organization that allows Jewish scum to flee from justice in basically European countries. And now this Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society is now bringing other human trash into America on a big scale. So that map is the map that Brand sent, and that will show you how this HIAS is actually bringing all kinds of failed human trash from South America as well as Africa into America. And I think even Chinese are using these things. And this whole thing is a slick operation. But anyway, our roving journalist, Mike, tells some interesting stories. But what I want to do is, at the end of this video, after the show, I'm going to add a few more thoughts about these things. Because in the show, we discuss how many Americans, white Americans, have been lulled to sleep and have been lulled into a false sense of security, and how they are living in what I would call a Jewish cocoon of stupidity and darkness. So here's the show, and I'm going to add other comments after the show. Hi there, Mike and Brandt. It's nice to have a chance to chat to both of you again. And today we're going to be focusing a lot more on things in North America. So how are you doing, Brandt?
Doing very well, thank you. It's not 50 below zero, so that's an improvement.
I was actually thinking about that. I was wondering, how is it now in March?
Oh, it's just getting a little bit muddy now.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, well, and in Africa, I'm telling you, the weather is never the problem here. The people are the problem here. Anyway, so, Mike, how are you doing?
Hi, Jan. Hi, Brandt. Really good. Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here again.
It's great to have you here. So, Mike, I believe that you've been traveling a little bit to California and talking to some people. Would you like to tell us about that?
Yes, definitely. I got to add California to my list of foreign countries. So I checked off another one off the box.
The communist state of California.
That's right. That's right. It earns its name well. Yeah, so I had to go to the Bay Area, Silicon Valley area, a couple months ago, and I came away with some observations that it took me a little while to process. I was actually a little bit in shock. I had not been there in well over a decade, and things have changed for the worse, and there were some weird moments that, you know, things reminded me of, believe it or not, of Venezuela, which I had visited maybe, I want to say 12, 13 years ago, sort of while it was starting to go downhill, but not in full-on collapse mode yet at that time. The first thing that struck me was how strange it was that every little average house that could be just anywhere in America in a blah neighborhood, nothing good, nothing bad, just a house, you know, we're all roughly 1.5 million US dollars, their supposed value that they're selling for now. And I had thought, well, you know, maybe these people are doing great out there and, you know, and everything is just fantastic and their houses are worth so much money. But I came away with the opposite impression. I came away with it that, you know, everybody was scurrying at these jobs that, you know, are high pay relative to the rest of the country, but they're not living better, you know, than say, I don't know, somebody that lives in Kansas City or something and makes 80,000. So they're living in a smaller house. They're broke. You know, their costs of everything are higher. I mean, I went to breakfast at one place and it was like $25 for basic breakfast. And so, you know, so it doesn't add up to them doing as well as I would have thought, you know, looking from the outside, thinking, wow, look how much your house is worth. I mean, I suppose if you get out of it and take your equity and go somewhere else, maybe that's the smart move. But I think people have already done that. But the reason the Venezuela part hit me the Venezuela observation was this very subtle, almost imperceptible look that the place and the feel of the place, that things were not maintained. So again, if you think about a house being worth that much money, you think, wow, it must be, you know, they must be proud of it and they keep it up. But I didn't see that. I was, you know, in these average neighborhoods where houses are worth that kind of money, and they looked kind of on edge. And it literally reminded me of Venezuela. And it, although not at that extent of destruction, but when I was in Venezuela, I walked around some neighborhoods that had previously been very expensive and very nice. And they had turned to where everything was in very bad maintenance condition. Everything was barred up and kind of destroyed. And it clicked. And I thought those two things were very similar. So that's not a super scientific observation, but it's just one of those gut feelings, you know, that you get when you go someplace.
Well, that's quite understandable because I look here in South Africa as I drive around. There are many places in the suburbs close to me, which I've seen over the last 30 years. And I can see how things are going downhill and worse and worse. There's a suburb not too far away that I drove to the other day, and I've had to go there a couple of times. And then one day, there was a breakage and a water leak, and the water was pouring out onto the road and coming from below, and eventually it ended up so that we have a two-lane road, and all the cars have to literally go into sort of one lane and kind of dodge around to see how we can get through this place, because it's washed away soil. This was a tar road, but now soil has been washed away. And the leak has continued for weeks. And to my amazement, it's so bad that I couldn't believe my eyes when about a week ago, I saw blacks. I saw some blacks who had one of their cars and a trailer, and they were bringing bricks and various junk to throw in there. It's the first time ever that I've seen blacks trying to fix a damaged road like this. And even then we were still dodging around. So afterwards, when I had to drive down that area again, so you're talking like maybe, I don't know, maybe a month that the local municipality hasn't done a thing. Okay. This is a place that's got a lot of traffic. There are lots of people around here. It's close to a big shopping mall, etc. And they've not come to fix this thing. So anyway, so as a result of this, I decided the next time I'm not going to go and dodge through this unstable thing. I will rather turn down one of the roads, because this is an area that's become very bad. But I decided I'm going to turn down the roads and drive into the bad area so that I don't have to do that dodgy thing where the road is bust. And I was driving down that area, which I'd probably last been in like more than 20 years ago. And I must tell you, the things that I saw there, it was really, really bad. And this is only a couple of kilometers from where I live. But in fact, in that area, I drove past a building where my dentist used to be. My dentist is a Boer, and he used to have, I used to go and visit him there. And I must tell you, now it looks like Nigeria right there. He's since moved on and built himself a house, and actually built himself a nice place where he works from now. But that place is bad, bad, bad. It's like the worst of your inner city kind of things. And that's just happened in a period of like 20 years. Whole place is fucking ruined. And as you drive down, I was looking at some of the things. I was thinking I must go there and just take some photos sometime. but it's looking horrific. And all over Johannesburg, in the areas near where I live, there are lovely suburbs. There are suburbs that I can see that 50 years ago, 50 and even 60 years ago, these were suburbs where really rich people lived. Really rich people. There are houses that are sitting on the sides of beautiful hills. They are double-story houses. They're built in difficult positions. You can see this must have cost a hell of a lot. And there are some places where I've even gone into them, and you can see, oh man, whoever owned this 60 years ago was like a millionaire at the time. They were like, these were like real upper class people. Now this place is going downhill. And that's really the story of all the things that I see. As you can see, it used to be first class. You know, in the 1960s, I'm just to tell you a bit. In the 1960s, I think South Africa, white South Africans, may have had the highest standard of living of any whites in the world. In the world. And you can see lots of parts of Johannesburg are like that. You go there, you look at the houses, you look at how they're built and how big they are, the big properties. And you look at them and you say, man, you know, even now, 50 or 60 years later, this is a nice place. And if you can get inside the place and you look at inside of it, you see, oh man, this was so first class. You know, people came here and they had cocktail parties. I think in the one place they might even have had a pool on the top of the house, something like that. And you look at these places, and so right on the top, there's like a whole area where people can sit and they can look down on the road and look down across the whole area and lovely scenery and stuff. You know, the people who lived there had to have had lots of money, high education, etc. Now that place is a rat hole and it's getting worse. So I do understand where you're coming from.
Yeah. Isn't that incredible? The place deteriorated and their money also deteriorated through inflation. And they seem to go hand in hand in these cases.
Yeah, that inflation thing of yours, I think we need to talk a little bit more about that later. Definitely we're going to talk about it today. But I want to hear more of what you saw.
Well, that was my observation, you know, as far as the rich, you know, so-called, not the very high end, but the nice, average, nice areas of the Bay Area. Excuse me. But I had another observation, and it was about the people, the employed people, let's call them, you know, the people with the jobs that can pay the mortgages for these type of houses. And it was quite a contrast for me, because if you're looking at any kind of alternative media, if you are, you know, if you know, you know, people who are interested in the truth in communities in America, then you might have, you know, let's call it up to 4 years of hearing the other side of the COVID operation, right? For example, understanding that the vaccine is dangerous, understanding that it's killed people. And so to meet somebody, and this is what happened to me in California in several instances, who are just now hearing their very first inkling that maybe there's something else to the story, or, you know, I can't quite connect it in my mind, but maybe the vaccine had a side effect. I mean, to see people just now barely opening their eye 1%, it's actually quite shocking. Because if you're coming from that, you're 4 years ahead, to see somebody that just today, even if their own family members, in cases that I encountered, had been extremely damaged or killed by the shot, then you're looking at them going, what's wrong with you? How could you have had your eyes closed this long? But I guess if they're working in one of these giant companies and they're, you know, constantly busy and they just watch TV, doesn't matter which channel, then, you know, maybe they've never seen anything. But with their own eyes, they haven't been able to connect. Why is that guy dead? Why is my wife sick when she's only this old or whatever? You know, why does my cousin have cancer? And they can't think well enough. The neurotoxins in their brain, both chemically and through television and through their work, have controlled them so sufficiently that they literally cannot think and put all these things together and understand what they have just witnessed and lived through. And that was my other observation. I mean, I was having a conversation in a restaurant with a guy whose wife had been severely harmed. I don't want to say the specific disease, but severely harmed by the vaccine, young lady. And another person was there, had been in the hospital after one of the vaccines, immediately after and connected to for heart issues. And I'm talking to these people and I just said, you know not to take any more of these things, right? And I said it really loud and I started talking about, you know, different people that have been just really working very hard all these years to let people, you know, to help people understand that these things are toxic. They're dangerous, they're deadly, or perhaps they're even a bioweapon. And these people looked at me like this is the first they've ever heard of it. And people at other tables sitting in this particular restaurant, which was all kind of crowded, were trying to lean over like, what is that guy talking about? And I'm sitting here going,
wow,
my God, this is the first these people have ever, anybody has ever said to them, don't take any more of these shots. And I was shocked. I was shocked. And I thought nothing could shock me. You know, I thought, these people are hopeless. They're lost. But it's, you know, but when you're there actually in front of somebody. And I'm not trying to push information on people, but I just have one line that I've learned to use with everybody. You know, not to take any more of those, right? And then it throws them off and they either go, yeah, I'm never taking another one again. I was in the hospital after the second one, blah, blah, you know, they either know or they look at you like, what did you just say to me? You know, and so that's my line. And that was, I have not seen so many people so deeply asleep to this day, as I did in California. And I'm an East Coast guy and I'm in a rural area. So, you know, so we have our half of the people that are, of course, still asleep. But then we have a whole bunch of people, you know, one out of every two, three or four or five, depending on where you're at, is completely aware that this thing is dangerous. But not in California. They did a very good job of injecting everybody. And that was my second shocking observation.
Now, that's really interesting. You know, one thing that I kind of pick up when I look at you Americans at the liberal side of things, it's as if they have very successfully created a cocoon of ignorance, and also putting people to sleep. Oh, don't listen to those conservatives. You know, they don't even talk about conservative. Anyone who's even like mildly conservative, if you can even apply that term to them, even mildly conservative in America, you know, these liberals will talk, oh, this is the right wing. It's the right wing. And you can't trust them, and they're just making things up. And you know, they don't even use those terms, you know. And they say, oh, they're always lying, you know, they're always lying. And they actually live in this stupid bubble, this bubble of stupidity. And mixed into this bubble is, of course, the fact that there's no such thing as race. And, you know, they're just these hateful right-wingers that are just making up shit that's not true. And they don't like Jews and they don't like blacks. So it's quite fascinating to see, you know, your country is so big that you seem to have quite a lot of powerful organizations and lots of people who live inside that, let's call it the cocoon of stupidity and darkness, the Jewish cocoon of stupidity and darkness. And they're feeling safe. Oh, this black guy over here, he's okay. It's, you know, the only reason blacks do anything nasty to whites is because, you know, whites are the real problem. And I can kind of understand that you can have people that are like lost and they believe everything that sits inside that cocoon. And if I may just add, I was just talking to a guy the other day on Gab. And I asked him a little bit about, you know, his background, how old he was. I actually thought I was talking to a very young guy. And he ended up saying to me, he's 65 years old now. And he said to me that it's taken, that his transition away from liberalism and leftism, he was even like reading communist literature, like Communist Party USA literature. And he said to me that his path away from that started as a result of 9/11. And he told me it's been a long path as he's slowly moved away. And he said to me that he is now 180 degrees the opposite of what he used to be. But it's taken him 20 years to fix his mind. And there's nothing wrong with that. It just goes to show, I've had so many discussions with people where it becomes clear, where I speak to people who've come right and I say to them, how long has it taken you? What have you done? I was asking a guy in Holland recently, one of my hardcore Dutch Nazi supporters, and he was telling me as well that it's taken him, I can't remember in his case whether it's taken him like 17 years or something, to slowly wake up and slowly change. Because once they change, that they don't change suddenly. They realize, okay, something is dodgy here. But they're not just going to change everything that they believe. They need time to think and to validate and to find new stuff and to trust before they can move to the next level. So it takes people a long time. It takes intelligent people a long time to undo, you know, decades worth of programming. And you know, and for the Jews, this is wonderful because you bullshit someone good and the bullshit will last like 20, 30 years, you know. So and then you've got Oprah Winfrey and all these others that always just pumping out all the crap to just keep telling them, no, this cocoon of stupidity and darkness. No, this is the real thing. This is the real thing. Here, this is the truth. I can sort of grasp that if you live among all these people and they all think the same way, that they might take a long time to wake up. That's how it appears to me.
You know, Jan, that's a perfect explanation, the word cocoon. And my last observation about California that I picked up on was one from an employee at, let's just call it a top 20 tech firm, right? And this guy was kind of, once he opened up, he started whining and complaining about the job. Even though he'd been at the job for many, many years, he was just complaining about the way that it worked. And he had a very high paying, very important job at this company. But he told me that he has to sign multiple NDAs a week. And I thought, huh? You know, because I'm a little bit, I work in a much, much smaller company. So, we don't have to deal with this sort of nonsense. And I thought, I thought you just signed one when you got the job, you know, that says, okay, I won't disclose the secrets or whatever. But it turns out he's got to this, you're going to laugh because he's got to sign one. Talk about a cocoon. He's got to sign one for every meeting, for every project, for every conversation. And it says who's allowed to know which parts of what he's working on and who's not allowed. And he told me that multiple times he could be in a meeting and do something as innocent as turn his screen around, say, oh yeah, check, see this section of this or whatever, and da da da. And someone in the meeting will say, turn that screen around because, you know, Jane over on this side hasn't signed an NDA for that little square on your screen. And so they're working in this environment of cocoon is right. It's severe cocoon, perhaps to the point that they've ruined, you know, the whatever innovative vision that, you know, when these type of companies are founded by a, like a, you know, somebody that's, you know, that's got some kind of creative vision, if you want to call it that. So I was kind of taken aback by that as well. But that kind of goes hand in hand with, you know, not having any information about what they injected themselves with. But that was my other shocking moment to just the idea that this is how companies are functioning now. It's like that you've got to constantly be signing NDAs constantly. One doesn't do any good. It's like to step over into that room, you've got to sign this to be able to speak about that to that person. I mean, it's very, very, you know, microscopic specific. Now, and of course, I already knew there's companies that employees' badges, you know, only get them to certain floors and things like that. I was aware of that sort of corporate habit, but I had never heard of this.
Wow, that is very interesting. You say this guy's in IT. Well, I functioned in IT in many companies, including banks. And interesting about non-disclosure agreements, I agree with you because that's how it used to be, that if I joined and I'm contracting to them or I'm an employee, you sign it once and that's that. And I was even in the military where at a point I had access to top secret stuff. And, you know, I can't imagine anyone more than the military forcing you to sign secrecy documents, because we did that quite a bit, but it sounds like what these people are doing is way over the top. And I was wondering, are they working on faster than light travel or something that requires this? What are they doing that's so freaking secret? But you know, it's quite funny, these modern corporations. I found, as a general observation in the banking environment where I was, I found that the more we moved into liberal and diversity stuff, the more paperwork we had. And I was actually talking to a guy recently about the way we used to function in the days of apartheid. In the days of apartheid, because this is spread, this thing of signing things constantly. In the 1980s, if you had to take out an insurance policy or an investment policy or something, or some kind of investment, you know, they come, they give you the pieces of paper, and they say to you, okay, this thing is like, you know, let's say 5 or 10 pages long, and just sign at the end of it. You know, just one signature, that's it. Okay, done. Nowadays, they come to you with piles of pieces of paper, and you've got to initial the bottom of every single page to show that you've read it. And of course, it's too much to actually read, so you never actually read it. So you find yourself, you know, initialing everything and signing it. I've now even found places where you'll fill in a document and you'll have to sign, you'll have to not only initial it, but there are places where you might even have to sign your signature more than once. And the paperwork has grown like 100-fold. And yet the thing that you're trying to do is still the same. And I look on it as the collapse of trust, that in the days of white rule, you know, everything was very straightforward and simple. You know, you do this, you sign the thing on the dotted line. If there is a problem and you need to go to court, no problem. You know, you've signed it, there's the proof, that's that, and we go fight it out in court. But nowadays, it's like everything. And it was amazing how complicated it became in the banking environment. We were also just, you know, paper, paper, paper. And I was quite amazed. We live in a computer age where we've got more computers than we had, you know, 30 and 40 years ago when I first got into computers. And I remember that the whole purpose in the early days of computing, when I was in my 20s, you know, talking 40 years ago, when we were saying, oh, we're going to move towards a paperless environment. Not so when it's diversity. It's actually 100 times more paper. And I cannot believe it, but I think that it's actually the result of the breakdown of a lot of things. Lots of things don't, you know, lots of trust that used to exist just doesn't exist anymore. But anyway, it sounds what you're describing sounds very similar to my experiences as my career, you know, towards the end of my career.
Wow. So, I think that's right. I think it is a breakdown of trust because they obviously don't trust their employees, which, and to answer your question about, you know, was it super secret spacecraft, whatever, of course, I'm sure everything inside what they're developing is, you know, has secret proprietary stuff. But to answer your question, no, I'm not going to say what it was, but it wasn't space travel. Let's call it something basic, right? So.
That's interesting. Very interesting. So what other things did you see in California?
Well, that would be my general observations. Well, I did go to just very, very quickly. I did just out of one evening, I was bored and I went to some sort of AI music symphony, which was just horrendous. It was basically they did three pieces. They did two known classical pieces, which were absolutely lovely. They killed it. And then in the middle, there was this just horrendous composition. I think written by one of our friends, which was some sort of just chaotic, discordant breakdown of playing like discordant kind of, you know, when they write things that are, I'm not a music critic, but you know, when they write things that the music is chaos, and then they brought in an AI written laser show of the AI playing that same instrument. And then they were supposed to end up, it was like a duel, the real cellist, I think it was a cello, a real cellist versus the AI. And then in the end, they were supposed to come into some form of harmony, but it was an absolutely horrendous piece of music. Couched on two sides at the opening of the show and the closing of the show by two beautiful pieces. And I guess the writer knew, if we don't hide this thing in the middle, you know, of course that was what it was sold as, was this supposed to be AI piece, but you know, if we don't hide it behind before and after two, you know, known pieces, you know, there's nothing here except discord. So it was, the orchestra was quite good at the two pieces at the beginning and the end. And this thing in the middle was just one. It's like listening to screeching or noise on a street it was terrible. I don't know what they were trying to pull off, but it was not listenable. Neither the human part, which the guy wrote intentionally discordant, or the AI part. It was like watching a horror movie.
Yeah, well, a lot of new things don't impress me at all. You cannot tell me this stuff is progress.
right. Yeah, so I had forgotten about that. So you jogged my memory for another special California moment.
Yeah. So did you speak to any other interesting people?
I sure did. I'm glad to share this with you guys. I did speak to one of these immigrants, invaders, whatever you want to call them, one of these people that came under the current open border policy. And the guy opened up to me and told me about his journey, and I wanted to share it with you guys if you had any questions or observations or something, but I wanted to kind of give you this one story. And I do realize there's 10 million of these stories now or more, but this was one story which some of the details were not what I expected. And, see what you guys think. But basically, it was a guy from Africa. My first question for the guy and my assumption was that he came as a part of some sort of an operation or paid, I don't know what you call them, but, these people that arrange the trip and things like that. And I had thought, well, everybody's in debt that comes in. And he said, no, he came. He just heard that he had a limited amount of time to get to the United States, and he decided to do it. So he got himself from Africa to the Middle East and took a flight, a nonstop flight from, I think he said, Dubai to Rio. And then I asked him, well, then, what did you do after that? Because you're way down in South America on sort of the wrong side, so to speak. And he said he took nonstop buses northward, and he claims that he got to the U.S. border in 45 days, which, I've been to all these places, not by bus, but I've been to all these places. These are huge areas. There's very bad roads in a lot of places. So I thought, well, okay, I guess if you went, excuse my language, but balls out, the whole way, nonstop, sleeping on buses, I suppose it's possible. But or he may not have been super accurate about the days, but it seems like that would be an horrifying journey to do that quickly. But anyway, that being aside, he made his way to Colombia after Brazil. And this was the first very interesting part of his story, besides the shock that he did not owe anybody any money for all this. He said it was the only trouble he had was Colombia, and he was held up. And I said, oh, what happened? And he said, I turned the gangsters to my side. And I said, what do you mean? He said, I turned them into my protection. So he said to me that I convinced them to protect me and give me a passage to whatever next part of the journey that he was on, and to give some sort of contacts at the next stage. And he paid them and basically turned himself into their client. And I was, I had to stop. I was like, man, this is weird. I said, this is actually on one hand, he's a very street smart guy who would have grown up around, I guess, some kind of gangs or other violent situations in Africa. But at the same time, I thought, but that's also very dangerous, for, as we're talking about, high trust, innocent, American white communities, because these are not compatible attitudes. On one hand, here's a guy who's got a gun in his face and turns it into, well, let me pay you to give me protection to the next city. Whereas you compare that to, an innocent small American town where, if there's some sort of trouble, they've got a system set up. Oh, we want to resolve it. Or if it's serious, maybe go to the police or something. And I just thought these two systems are not, these two mentalities are not compatible. So that kind of, I placed that in the back of my mind and let him continue his story. So he did say there were, as we now know, because there's been lots of publicity in any kind of even mainstream right-wing media, there's been lots of publicity about this situation. But he did say he made it through Panama, through the Darien Gap. And there were lots of guides, and there was never a problem like, where do I go next, or how do I get the next bus? There is a industry set up apart from like paying what they called a mule in the past, right? So you can go with a little bit of money and you can pay bus to bus to bus, or get NGO help with these camps that they've set up on the way. So he made it to continuing on across Central America and Mexico, and he went to Tijuana. So again, here's another where I expected the story to be something that it wasn't. I thought, oh, okay, so where did you cross and swim across the river and go through a cut piece of the gate and this and that? I'm like ready for the adventure part. He goes, no, I just went up to the border, the regular legal border at San Diego. And I said, what? Wait a minute, but how? He said, no, they told us you just go there. He said they said to throw away their ID, but he hid his ID instead. And you go up there and say that you're here for asylum. And while he was telling me the story, he raised his hands up, like showing me that he walked with his hands up to the border, like some sort of, you know, act of surrender or whatever. And he said that he came for asylum, and that they set him aside to process him. And here's the real shock, the final shock of the story. He said it took 45 minutes and he was given a work permit. So that's it. All you got to do is walk up to the border, it looks like, from anywhere in the world. See, we watch these stories on the news and we think they're all, you know, crawling through the mud. But these people are not going to be deported. You know, we have this hopium of, oh, you know, Trump's going to get in office and deport all these people. This guy, I guess, technically, if they handed him a work permit, they handed him a piece of paper that says you can be here. And that work permit will turn to a residence. That residence will turn to a citizenship. And that is that's the way that goes. And that's, you know, like I said, that's one guy with some of the details of the story that shocked me and some that are sort of like what we hear about. And one more little last thing. I don't know how long he had been in the States. I think it was in the months, you know, 3 months, 6 months. It wasn't a year, but it was in, you know, he also wasn't, you know, hadn't just arrived last week. And he had already been to a funeral of someone that he had never met, but somehow was distantly related, you know, cousin, you know, whatever, child of a cousin, something like that, you know, some distant relative. And I said, oh my God, what, you know, what happened? Was it like your same factions back home fighting each other in here in the U.S.? He said, no, they were born in the U.S., both the killer and his distant family member that had been killed, and they had grown up in the U.S. and they had brand new gangs and affiliations that had nothing to do with the factions back home. And so, you know, he was telling me about going to this funeral, and I said, oh, interesting, because again, there's another place that I assumed, oh, it must be they brought it from, you know, the specific thing, the specific fight or whatever that they had back in where they call back home. But in fact, it was homegrown, you know, with their culture, even though those were first generation American born from this same culture. But they still, you know, managed to already be involved in killing each other. So that's my African migrant or invader or whatever you want to call the guy story. What do you guys think about that?
Okay. Well, I just want to ask you, did you manage to find out from him which African country he came from?
I wanted to let him talk, so I didn't want to dig too much, like I was interrogating him, so I didn't get all the details. There are many things like that I wish I had asked, but I just wanted him to just talk and tell the story. I also wanted to ask him, are you getting some kind of free money or something in the States, or did you get a free cell phone? But there's lots of questions like that. Unfortunately, I didn't ask, but that's sort of, you know, what I'm sharing with you now is kind of the bulk of what I heard.
Okay, that's interesting. Just a few things. in case Brant also wants to comment. Just a few things that struck me from the story that you told. The whole story of how he got to America is wild. The whole thing of flying from here to there to the Middle East to Rio, traveling, what a thing. The only thing I can think of that comes to mind for a normal African is this has to have cost a lot of money, because even just those air trips and stuff, he had to have had proper passports and stuff, and he had to have had money. I can't see that just any normal black could do this. So that's the one thing. The whole bizarre route that he takes, and how many countries he travels through, and I don't know South America, but the little bit that I kind of grasp from Latin America and South America is, I think that you're definitely right that this couldn't just have taken 45 days. I can imagine how many countries he had to have traveled through, and how the hell did he even know? Oh, I'm in this place now. I got to go there. It's amazing how this whole process has been set up. You mentioned this industry of NGOs. The whole thing of coming in and seeking asylum, that's a mind blower. I know one black from Zimbabwe who got into South Africa on the basis of asylum, and he had to get political asylum because he was against the current government. And he's the only black that I know of that ever got asylum in this country. I'm amazed that guy can get asylum. And how can they give him asylum so quickly? Because what's his proof? Sorry, go for it, Brent.
Yeah, okay. I want to cut in here. Okay. So first of all, they're not getting asylum. That's got nothing to do with it. They're coached on what to say, what to do with their IDs, etc. They're being helped at many stations along the way to get into the States. This is all bullshit. None of this is on the level. They're not asylum seekers. It's all a bunch of freaking nonsense. It's white erasure. It's pumping our countries full of non-whites. I just, in our chat right now, guys, if you look in our chat, and Jan, maybe you can put this up when you post this on your website. This is highest centers in Central and South America. These are centers that help these guys along the way. So they're helped. They're giving transportation in some places. They're probably given money. They're coached on what to do. Okay. Anyway, if you don't see it right now, then it'll be up for people that are listening. This is from Mexico all the way down to Ecuador, Colombia, Venezuela, Guyana. These are different stations where when these people hit these places, they can send them on to the next one until they get them up to the border. So this is facilitated both outside of our country and inside of our country. And this particular image that I'm sending to Jan and Mike right now, this is HIA. So this is the premier Jewish immigration organization inside the United States. So all of this is being done on purpose. It's fine-tuned. It's a well-oiled machine. And I don't mean to sound black-pilled here. I'm just being realistic. What was the United States, which was a country built by white people for white people, and others were allowed to come into it and receive citizenship? Okay, that's done for. It's still functional right now, but it's going the way of Brazil. It's going the way of South Africa. And it's not because we don't have the numbers, but because of the anti-white policies and the anti-white propaganda that have brainwashed our people to being almost paralyzed to letting this happen, plus also being completely stabbed in the back by our leaders. Our leaders are completely corrupt, immoral, they're traitorous, and they have appointed a lot of non-whites into cabinet positions. You have a tremendous amount of Jews in Joe Biden's cabinet right now. He's probably not the one in power. There are other people making these decisions. And all of this every single time that people talk about a piece of this, it's just a piece of the larger puzzle. If you pull back at the 50,000-foot view, you can see how all of this fits in together. So when someone says, hey, how are they getting asylum? They're not getting asylum. It's not the old systems anymore. It's brand new bullshit.
That's right, Brent. This is an abuse of a system set up by people who thought, oh, we need these special circumstances in case there are, you know, this is the thinking of the people that set this up, in case there are extreme circumstances, someone being tortured and they escape. But now the people in charge are abusing these systems, going, you just say this and you're in. Now, I've heard in Europe, if you want to get into, you know, Ireland or somewhere, all you have to do is say, I'm a lesbian and they tortured me for being a lesbian. And oh, goodness gracious, come on in. So it's the same. It's exactly, Brant's exactly right. It's not real asylum. It's just the words to say that the current administration and management of the border has been instructed to do. Yep, okay. Yo, asylum? All right. What's your name? You'd like to say that's your name? And I don't think in 45 minutes they could really figure out who this guy is. I mean, obviously, that's not realistic to think that somebody with no documentation can just show up and say, my name is whatever, and I need asylum. And so it's an abuse of the word asylum. Have you guys heard of what was in the, there was these 60s leftist professors, and they came up with this thing called the Cloward Piven strategy. And that their explicit goal, and it goes hand in hand with the Kalergi plan, the replacement plan. So it's another aspect of it. But the Cloward Piven strategy, their explicit stated goal was to overwhelm all of the social safety net, welfare systems in the United States with basically, you know, poor immigrants, so that it would collapse it. And that's happening now. That's happening now. I don't think we're being told the truth about hospital collapse. You know, I mean, you have cities that are paying, you know, that are taking up all the hotel rooms in America. You know, government's paying for these people to stay places. And then, you know, of course you've heard maybe the story recently that New York City has decided that they want to hand out $10,000 prepaid debit cards to these people with no checks. And a friend of mine was called me and said, oh my gosh, you know, they're going to give $10,000 to the immigrants. I said, no, they're not. Do you think that the people that run New York City, including the black mayor, are going to really hand out those cards? They're going to hand out two or three on TV, and the rest are all going to go in their pockets because they're untraced, untracked, no system of, you know, no system of control. I said, people don't, you know, all of a sudden become nice and honest and, oh, we've got these little chips, they're, you know, these little cards, they're worth $10,000 apiece. You know, make sure you only get one. You know, no, they're going to hand them off to their friends. This is a payoff of some kind. This is a, if you think about it, you know, 100 of them are $1 million. So if they come up and say, well, you know, we've got $48 million of these things, then they've got a stack of whatever, you know, a few thousand of these cards. And they're not going to go to these migrants that are staying in these little encampments and hotels and things that they've devised in New York City. They're going to go into these politicians and friends' pockets. It's absurd. The idea that they're actually going to give them that is laughable. Not that they don't give them other kinds of assistance, but anytime you hear about in America, oh, they came here and they get $2,000 a month. Well, there's probably thousands or hundreds of fake names on those rolls where people connected to the Democrat machine are getting that $2,000 a month into some sort of debit card or whatever. People hear the story, and then their own naivete or their own their own application of their high trust thought process to that system doesn't allow them to go far enough to realize, yes, there are some migrants getting their $2,000 a month or getting their free hotel room or getting their $10,000 debit card, but the majority of these things are probably being stolen if you just know how American urban run cities work.
And when you say urban, you mean non-white?
Correct. Right. Like okay, the New York City mayor. You know, do you think that he's going to honestly pass out? He's got a stack of 10,000 cards that are worth 10,000 each.
Yeah.
I don't know the guy, but I'm saying, hey,
sure.
There's enough likely doubt in the air that yep. I can't just assume that Eric Adams is going to make sure that these cards get passed one by one to migrants. Yep. I mean, that's laughable to think that's the way that's going to yep. unfold, you know?
So it's very interesting hearing how corrupt your system is. You guys are clearly seeing your system as much more corrupt than I, from my distance, realized. I never thought you people were that bad. but that is very fascinating input there, guys. I see that map now. Yes, and that Hebrew immigrant HIAS, I'm not sure what it stands for, Hebrew Immigrant Society or something. Yes, I've come across that. So Jews are basically playing a big role in just pumping people into America. All kinds of garbage, just getting garbage into America, and they've got it covered on the outside and the inside.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I will say this about world Jewry. The way that they look out for each other is commendable from the point of view in that that's what our people need to do. That's what white people should have been doing. Although our people are more individualistic for various reasons, where Jews, because of their mindset of where are we set upon, oy vey, you know, there's a small fraction of us. We're, I don't know, we're chosen by God, etc. We have to stick together. We're always the outsider. And that attitude has served them very well because they're still in existence and they're stronger now than they've ever been before. But again, I think what you've said in the past, John, and what Mike's been saying tonight or this morning, whatever part of the world we're in, if we have high trust societies, which is the type of countries that white people make, Western kind makes, we are used to the rules that we have set for ourselves, and we automatically expect other people to play by those rules, but they don't, so we keep getting burned. And our so-called leadership are also screwing us over, because instead of them serving us, they're serving themselves, and they love that Jewish money. Oh God, they love it. Now, if Jews didn't have a bunch of money, they wouldn't be in the position of power that they are now. But there's been this working relationship between our leaders and Jews with money going back hundreds of years. You can look at several examples of that in Europe. And now, with our high trust societies, which are becoming less and less high trust all the time as we start to wake up in all these different areas around our countries, and waking up in different areas of the United States, like you said before, Jan, the United States is very big. And there's still a lot of little places in the United States in the West that are completely oblivious to what's going on. They have no idea still, because they don't run into that many non-whites. Everything that they know about the world comes through TV or movies or TikTok or TalkTik or something else like that. So in the way that Mike was talking about a cocoon, there's other types of cocoons, or I could say that our countries used to be like a cocoon for ourselves. Let's say, for example, the apartheid era in South Africa or 1950s in the United States. It was running well. You know, it's high trust. We've created these societies for ourselves. We know what our expectations are. We know what our laws are. And it functions well in that respect. And I think so many of us in those countries at those times were more so in America, not so much in South Africa. In America, I'll just pick on America. So many of our people were just completely oblivious to what's going on in the third world, because whatever filters into what our people see is going to get massaged by the TV stations, or we're going to see romanticized or idyllic depictions of the third world. We're going to see these fantastic romantic stories or something like that. So we had no idea what was going on. Americans had no idea what happened to the Germans in World War II and at the end of World War II. It's almost like living in a little fantasy all the time. And I can't speak so much for people in other countries, but I can speak for the American mindset, which is changing as we start to become more mature, as we become less gullible, and we see just how horrible things actually are. Some people are still going to be clinging to that little cocoon that they like, these anti-whites that call themselves liberals. And they're still going to be selectively hanging out with friends which are echo chambers for them. And they're still going to be looking at MSNBC or CNN, these anti-white stations. Or they're going to be reading the Atlantic or the New York Times. I know some friends that are kind of like semi-ex-friends now that will only look at modes of information or avenues of information that they already agree with. So they feel good about that. They feel good about themselves. And they talk about all of those hateful Nazis that voted for Donald Trump or this other group over here. It's just a giant mishmash of information filtering down to some people and no information filtering down to other people. And some groups of people just believing outright lies about other groups. It's kind of freaking chaotic. But I think at a foundational level underneath all of that, because of the internet and only because of the internet, we or people who are intellectually curious can start to see what's happening. And people who can share things on the internet, like people in Texas, officials in Texas that are trying to do something about their border, only because of the internet are they able to share this information. And then the federal government finally has to acknowledge what they've been doing. They have to acknowledge how they've been screwing us over. They have to, the Supreme Court has to come down with rulings on that. The Department of Homeland Security has to answer for that. So I'm rambling here a bit. Okay, to summarize, we built high trust societies. We got screwed over by anti-whites. A lot of that was our leaders. A lot of that was organized Jewish community. Non-whites come in and take advantage of our societies. Of course, they take advantage. You can see that the welfare-laden, high trust, high-functioning things that we've built, they all want a part of that because they can't make that on their own. So they come and they take that. And then on top of that, our people have been constantly brainwashed to say, you should feel guilty because you're a white person. You should feel guilty because you stole everything and enslaved everyone and stole the earth and did all these magical things to have all of this nice stuff. And now you have to turn it over to everyone else. And when it's turned over to everyone else, it's going to function just as good because we're all exactly equal and there's no sexes or you can be gender fluid, you know, whatever, except if you're white, you're guilty. I'm going to shut up now because I've gone so far off the rails.
No, it was awesome. Okay. It was awesome. Thank you so much, Brent. I just want to just touch on a couple of things that the two of you have mentioned quickly. The one thing is that point that you had about the gangsters, that this guy was dealing with gangsters and he had the savvy to make the gangsters suddenly protect him. Very, very weird and creepy. But, you know, like you were saying, he's bringing that kind of mentality into America. The bottom line is that when I look at this, where you were also talking about the blacks related to him who'd been born in America and, you know, you've already got a killer and a victim and they're already part of new gangs. See, they're just bringing their shit with them. The shit that's in their minds, all their crap they're bringing to you. They are not changing and improving. They are what they are. It's like expecting a lion to walk into your lounge and start behaving like a lamb. It just ain't going to happen. And humans remain what they are. And these are low IQ people. They come from very weird backgrounds that have got nothing related to Europe and European backgrounds, because as much as you live in America, your background and your culture is European, fully. You know, you're just a European right. that's transplanted onto another continent, but you're still a European. And they are the same. They're just going to be black garbage, low IQ black garbage from Africa being transplanted into your country. And you're going to have all the same problems. They bring in all their shit with them. And they might even bring the rest of their family with them. They might bring all kinds of family with them. They're going to be, you know, for me, when I look at what lies ahead for all of you, it's very bad, because these people are now your equal. They're equal to you. That they can vote like you. You were born there. You know the politics. You know the country. And yet this doofus from another continent, who actually doesn't give a shit about America, this doofus has got the same voting power as you. And in front of the law, he's the same as you. And when it comes to jobs, he might even have the edge on you. The whole thing is dreadful for you people. I just wanted to touch on things that Brandt raised. Brandt spoke about apartheid, etc. Brandt, now that you guys can start seeing the horror of the rest of the world, now that you can see the horror of the rest of the world compared to the lovely American cocoon when America was white and America was peaceful, now you should be able to understand why the whites who lived in Africa made all those rules that we made. Why we discriminated against blacks, why we discriminated against them under British colonialism, French colonialism, etc., and why we created things like apartheid. Because you cannot coexist with these people on the same level. So, the things we did were necessary for our survival. Absolutely necessary. If we made them our equals, we would have been destroyed. And every move that was made, whether it was Rhodesia or South Africa, everything that brought us closer to equality and giving them equality with us, end result was basically our destruction. So,
yeah, Jan, I totally understand why apartheid was put in place. And when you say equal, I think that I don't understand it, or in my mind, I'm not giving it the same definition as the way that it's normally used. But I think what you're saying is giving them an equal share in the running and the decision-making processes of those countries. Is that what you mean?
Yes. I like both of your attention to detail. It's excellent. Yes, you're clarifying it clearly. Yes, that okay. in the real world, in the eyes of the state, the nation state, the government, you are no different to them. It's actually horrifying. You know the Romans. I think the Romans had some very tough rules on how to become a Roman. It was very hard to actually become a Roman. And so here, basically, within 45 minutes, a black is already well on his way to becoming, it's just going to take a little while, work permit, job, etc. And next thing you know, he's got all kinds of things that allow him to participate in life exactly the same as you. It's actually horrific.
Yeah, Jan, there is one other analogy that pops into my mind sometimes, like when you were talking about making blacks equal, you know, giving them the same power of making the decisions. What if someone, maybe someone can use this as an analogy for other people if you're bringing the subject up. Let's say that there's a mom and a dad. They've got a bunch of kids. The kids are young. Are they going to allow the kids to have the same decision-making process for the family as mom and dad has? Okay, what are we going to spend our money on? Macaroni and cheese and donuts and video games and toys? Are we going to stop paying our bills? Are we going to stop paying for electricity and gasoline? You would never, responsible parents would never give the decision-making process to the children. They would never make them co-equal partners. And I think that this is at one of the fundamental lies that Western kind has been fed over and over and over, and that is that we are all equal, we are all the same. That's not true. That's a lie. And I would say that that is an anti-white lie, because that is aimed at only white people for us to, or trying to manipulate us to give up control of our countries that will only exist as far or as long as we are running them. When we are no longer in charge of our own countries, they cease to exist, because those things come from inside of us. South Africa only comes from white people. The United States only comes from white people. If all the whites disappeared from the country of South Africa or United States, and they're replaced with Africans and Mexicans and, Koreans and Papua New Guineans, there is no United States anymore. There is no South Africa anymore. Well, I don't know if you'd really say that there's a South Africa right now. But people are not the same. The people who create a country have to stay in charge of that country. They are the ones who have the biospirit who created that. If you allow other people to take it over, it doesn't exist anymore. Just like with the example of Japan that people use sometimes. If you took all the Japanese people off of the Japanese islands and replaced them with the same number of Nigerians, would you still have Japan? Hell no. You would have something that's going to resemble Nigeria with a bunch of wrecked, Japanese buildings around. So the people, white people who created white countries have to be in charge of those countries. The equality is a bunch of nonsense. Basically, end of story. That's the grown-up take on that.
No, brilliantly said. And I love your comparison with children. Perfectly said. That is even something in Africa that we never used to, in colonial times, we never even used to refer to black male adults as men. We always used to call them boy, and we used to look down on these people as children. And, they are children. Their IQ compared to our IQ, and it's not just IQ, it's the values also inside of us. The value system that we've built with this, the whole conditioning, high trust, how we work together. When I'm in this situation, this is how I behave, and you will behave the same way. All that kind of stuff that's built into you, that's been quietly drummed into you since you were a child. Your mom and dad said to you, listen, when this thing happens, that's how you behave, etc. These other people are like aliens. Firstly, they're stupid and they're childish and they're lower IQ and they're completely alien and they don't care. Why are they... Let me just explain from my point of view. Oh, yes, I was talking to a black Zimbabwean recently. The black Zimbabwean said to me, so many of the guys he knows has left South Africa. So I said to him, which guys have left and, where are they from? And he said, no, all the Zimbabweans that he knows have left South Africa to go to Britain. So I said, okay, thank you. Thank you for telling me that. I didn't know that. So let me tell you, these people, all of them are losers and failures. And they are all just looking for an easy way out. And for them, for them to be told, let's go with this $10,000 credit card, even if they don't all get it. You turn those numbers into African money, and I'm sure Mike will know what this means. You take $10,000, turn it into African money, and you'll see how much freaking money it is, okay? And all these people are interested in is they're no different to the Jews in the sense that they just need a place to go and live and get lots of cash, and they don't really care, and they will send money back home. Like in South Africa, all these blacks who live in South Africa, the Zimbabweans and others, they live in South Africa and they send money back home to their real family. And, you know, they don't care about anything else. They're just here for some money. Everyone's here just to make money. They don't really care. South Africa in African terms is like America. And South Africa is just a shopping mall. It's just a marketplace. South Africa is a shopping mall and a marketplace. And people come to South Africa not because they give a crap about South Africa. Blacks come to South Africa in order to sponge off of South Africa however they can. That's also why we got some Indians here, because life in India would be much worse than life in South Africa. Now, translate South Africa to America. America is an even more magnificent possibility. And if you can get into America, you can get tons and tons of shit and big money jobs. Even if a guy's got a low-paying job in America, he'll be earning much more money than he'd ever have earned in Africa. Plus, with your welfare system and all the kinds of things you guys give them, all of these people are garbage. They're human garbage, and they're just there to come and get what they can out of your country. Thanks to the Jews, Jews are promoting all these people up through your society. Jews, to be frank with you, don't give a fuck about America, and neither do these others, okay? So when all of those people are promoted into positions of power, either in business or, God help you, in government, these people don't give a shit about anything. And when America is set on fire and America is burning one day, all of the Jews and all these other blacks, they'll just be finding the quickest way to get out of America. America's on fire, and the only people that are going to be sitting there carrying the can are going to be you white Americans. It's exactly the same as what it is here in South Africa. The only people who actually really give a damn about South Africa are actually the Boers, the Afrikaans people. They're the only ones that really care about South Africa. The rest of them, everyone's here just to make a quick buck, do what they can, and hey, when the thing dries up, they'll be out of here. And you guys are heading straight into that, and Jews are setting you up for all kinds of crazy shit. It's actually dreadful to have to watch this, but those are my final comments.
Yeah, John, I want to say one sentence. When you said the only ones who care about South Africa are the Boers or the Afrikaans, that's because they are South Africa. All the other ones are not South Africa. They're just living in that space that South Africa takes up geographically.
Brilliantly said, Brent. Brilliantly said. Yes. Yes, same for you guys. Same for you guys. So yeah, what a nightmare. Well, we've actually gone a bit over our time, so I don't think we've got time for other things. But do you guys have any final things you want to say? Because I think there was a lot of very fascinating stuff in here. Mike, this was quite a hell of a story. Hearing this story, this is quite something to hear, the story of how these bastards get into your country. And I'm horrified by the system that exists. But you know, this is just a typical example of Jews operating on the outside and the inside, hey? Jews are at both ends of the scale. They're outside being globalists, and they're on the inside opening the freaking doors, and they're colluding together, and the next thing you know is all this human garbage. You know who said it the best? Ben Klassen of the Church of Creativity. I read where he said, that they're turning America into a human pigsty. A human pigsty. That's exactly what they're doing. That's exactly what they're doing. Over here, we're already, like you say, over here, South Africa's already disappeared. South Africa's already long gone. It's only the Boers sitting around trying to figure out, can we still pull something out of this? But you're quite right. A country is made up of the people who created it, period.
Yeah. I'll just make one final comment, and it's technical in nature, because I just want people listening to stop focusing on voting. The right-wing media, or so-called right-wing media in this country, keeps telling us, oh my gosh, you know, down the road they're going to be citizens and they're going to vote. But this is a distraction. The voting doesn't matter. And let me explain why, and I'll be brief so we can wrap it up. But if a state like, say, Illinois has lost through people leaving, productive people leaving, white people leaving, and people dying, if they're losing population, they're going to lose all kinds of funding, and they're going to lose the number of representatives that they have in the House of Representatives in the United States Congress. So, but when they do this count, they stopped counting on the last sentence, census, they stopped counting citizenship. So they just say, oh, look, we have, you know, this many million people came in. We have this many people. So they can either maintain or grow the number of representatives they have in Congress. And this is very funny because this ties into some very controversial part of American history where when the states in the South had slave populations who were not eligible, the slaves were not eligible to vote, but the Southern states were saying, hey, we are underrepresented in Congress because we have these extra people, even though they're not voting citizens, we have these amounts of extra people and we need more representation in Congress. They came up with what, as you may remember from history, is called the Three-Fifths Compromise. So they gave, when they counted the population for purposes of counting the number of representatives available from that state to go to the U.S. Congress, they counted the number of slaves and divided and gave it three-fifths. And of course, all the, you know, liberals ever since then have screamed about this. Oh my goodness, you know, they count a man as a three-fifths of a man. That wasn't the point. They were just trying to come up with an estimate of how do you weight the representation of these people who are in another category at that time, right? So now today, they're bringing all these people in and they're, it doesn't matter that they're non-citizens. It doesn't even matter that they're not eligible to vote. They count for purposes of either maintaining or growing the number of representatives that the states have. So I just wanted to share that because a lot of people are distracted by the voting issue, which we could go on another rabbit hole. Voting may just be a video game in this country anyway, but the voting is not the point. The point is, number one, I think the point is the planned destruction of our society. And number two is these technical moves that these people are making in the meantime, because they don't care that things fall apart in 10 years. But right now they get their funding and they get their money and they continue the operation. But I just wanted to throw that out there.
That's a very important point. I would never have known that. So, oh man, there's all kinds of weird stuff going on and it has other meanings. So even before the guy is a citizen, it's already affecting the way that your politics is working. How freaky. And I think the final thing that I'll just add is to say that I find it very interesting how everything is focused on money, 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 money. And the more I look at capitalism, the more I say to myself, capitalism, there are many things capitalism and business cannot solve. Long time ago, I used to think in a Ronald Reagan kind of a style that business fixes everything. That's a bunch of baloney. And I now understand why someone like Adolf Hitler focused on the concept of socialism, because we gotta teamwork has to be more important than money. Money alone will never save us, and money is where everything's going wrong. It's horrific to see. But very, very fascinating discussion, guys. Very fascinating. There might be things we can pick up on it later again, but very, very excellent discussion. Thank you for that information. Really appreciated it.
Thank you both.
All right. Good times.
I just want to add a few other points that I think Americans need to grasp. When you are reading history or news as it relates to either whites on other continents or your own ancestors, and you read all this modern moralistic rubbish, these whites, they were so cruel, they did this thing because they were so evil, they created apartheid, they were Nazis, they did this, they did that, they slaughtered the Indians, etc. I just want to explain something from a personal perspective, having grown up here in Africa and watching how we did things. The bottom line with the way that we worked with the blacks, whether it was under British colonialism or whether it was under apartheid, the rules that the whites made were rules that were necessary in order to protect ourselves. Whites made rules so that we could function and we could retain control of the regions we're in charge of. We didn't just make rules needlessly. All the rules that we made were necessary. We treated the blacks like children, and we treated them as lower humans. But we did that because that is the only way that we can continue to function. And all subsequent experience has shown that if we go and we allow large numbers of people who outnumber us and are another race that is totally alien to us, that if we go and we allow them to have power in our society over us, that we then end up with a huge disaster that doesn't work for us. So our ancestors made rules, and all the rules were made to ensure that we can survive and live and control this society. We also did not trust these people. We were absolutely certain these people were stupid and you cannot trust them. And if you give them power, they will do bad things for us. All of these things were things we knew, and we had seen enough of their characters to know that you can't trust them, that they will lie, they will steal, etc. You must never think that whites just make rules for fun, that we make rules because we are driven by hatred. We actually make rules almost exclusively on the basis of reality. What is absolutely necessary? And we do that, obviously, for our benefit so that we can continue to run society and that the society remains under our control. Don't imagine that we didn't have knowledge about the blacks or that there weren't some of the blacks that we actually spoke to and we thought about what we are doing. The main thing that I want to suggest that you stay away from is the notion that whites did things out of hatred. Whites actually did things for practical purposes, practical reasons. And I will bet you that everything that your ancestors did in North America and Canada was done for exactly the same reasons. You people, your ancestors did things so that they could survive and they could continue. They didn't just do it because they were blinded by emotion and rage, etc. Whites are actually very logical. So that's the one point I want to make. The other point that I'd like to make is about how other races view us. Because Mike raised the issue that this, quotes, immigrant was basically sort of laughing at America for allowing him in on the basis of seeking asylum. He knew that this is the code word he has to give, and then he can get in. And in 45 minutes, bing, bang, boom, there he's got his initial documents, and he's going to be allowed in. So Mike did point out that they laugh at the system. And then what I did, and I did this in the private discussion afterwards, and that's why I want to add it in here, is that at the end of the day, there is a lot of Jewish nonsense where Jews, in their typical fashion, will take history and they'll reinterpret it in a way that suits them. And in this case, Jews have managed to convince Americans that everything that's gone wrong with blacks is not due to blacks. It's due to whites not treating blacks correctly. This is a Jewish lie that in particular irritates me intensely. I am horrified that the final lesson of Africa, according to Jews, is that everything that went wrong in Africa was due to whites not treating blacks correctly. And of course, totally ignoring all the shortcomings, the many, many shortcomings of the blacks. And so you've got these stupid liberals in America who live in cocoons of stupidity and darkness. I've defined a white liberal as someone who is A, stupid, B, a coward. And I'll return to that. So what you've got is these stupid, cowardly whites who've been fooled by Jews, and these stupid, cowardly whites now believe that they have to go and lick the boots of these blacks because blacks are, quotes, strong and all that kind of stuff. And that they need to go and basically lick the boots of these blacks so that the blacks will like them. In historical terms, there are deeper discussions about these kinds of things. And what I want to leave you with, which I will explain more later, what I want to leave you with is that we as whites have got a couple of choices. We can try to get other races to, quotes, love us or like us a lot. Or we can get other races to respect us. Or we can get other races to fear us. And in history, the thing that really works is respect and fear. In history, that's what really works. That if you are dealing with other humans who are willing to fight you, which these blacks are willing to do, and Jews are willing to do, if you really want to deal with those people properly, they must A, respect you, and B, which is maybe even more important, they must fear you. So returning to that, quotes, immigrant, he's already laughing at American immigration rules that allow him to just come and say, oh, I'm just seeking asylum. They're doing cruel things to me. Help me. And boom, he's allowed into America. So now his impression of America is that white Americans are basically stupid. They are weak and stupid. And he's going to tap into this. And he'll tap into it as many times as whites let him. And if they believe that they can start playing with your system, rest assured they're going to push their luck all the time. And look at all these people, all this human trash that is pouring into America. Imagine if they feared Americans. Imagine if they feared you. Then, even if the Jews come and say to them, hey, you can get into America easy, this is how you do it, they might say, you know what, I think I'd rather stay where I am. Now, liberals, white liberals, being the stupid, weakling, coward, demented fools that they are, they believe that they need other people. They believe that these other people also provide them with strength. They believe that they can become buddies with these people and that these people working with them will result in a better society. They believe all kinds of rubbish about these other people and their relationship with these other people. And they've been poisoned by anti-white junk inside America into not valuing other whites, into not working with and sticking together with other whites. Their minds have already been rotted by media and other stuff. So those fools live in a strange world where they fear other non-whites and they fear that they've already lost and they fear that America will one day be conquered by China and everybody else, that Africa and China and India will conquer America and you'll be speaking Chinese in the next 50 years. They have got all these demented rubbish ideas in their head. They don't see history the way that it is. They don't see reality the way that it is. But the real reality of real history, and this has been done to death for thousands of years, is that ultimately the way that you deal with other people outside of our civilization and even troublemakers inside our civilization is that you need to get them to, if they won't respect you, they must at least fear you. Fear is very important. And all these moralists and other sorted rubbish, they'll keep telling you, oh no, these people are so cruel and they're so hideous and you must get people to love you. No, you need to be careful when you're dealing with the lower man, and that includes Jews, of making them too comfortable among you. A lot of your problems in America come from the fact that you accepted rubbish into your society and you've allowed the rubbish to settle down in your society. And what did the rubbish do once they settled down in your society? They started working against you. You go and look at these Jews and Jews who were involved in communism and all that kind of stuff. You'll see that these people have been working for decades inside America under the protection of American law and the American police, and that despite all the opportunities and protection that these people got, they still work for the downfall of whites. And they don't give a crap about America. They don't give a shit about America. When America's on fire one day, they're going to jump on a plane and move to the next destination. That is where this whole freaking Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society comes from. This is from more than a century ago. This is what these Jews do. They go to a place, they live there, they create problems. Later, the local whites find out and want to kill them. They want to kill them and they want to punish them for the evil that they got up to. And the Jews have got the whole thing set up. Oh, they got this pipeline to get all their garbage, all their criminals and their garbage and their assorted human trash out of that country and to funnel them into the next country where they go and they start the whole cycle again. And you'll see, you had all these Russian Jews who left Russia and went elsewhere to cause trouble. And look at South Africa. I've looked in South African history. Lots and lots of modern Jewish troublemakers, evil scum, are actually Jews who were German Jews who fled from Adolf Hitler when Adolf Hitler was trying to kick the Jews' asses and sort them out. And so you had German Jew crap coming to South Africa where they were treated well. And what did they do? They worked to get blacks to work with them to overthrow the whites. And now they are bum chums with all these black scum and garbage. And they are playing their role with all this corruption and other nonsense going on. And these other humans, these other lower humans, which includes Jews, these other lower humans are what they are. It's like a dog is a dog and a cat is a cat. And you don't expect a cat to start barking like a dog. Well, all these other humans are exactly the same. And when Jews change countries, they remain Jews and they remain the same troublesome nonsense and shit that they are. And you find that all these Jews also carry with them their Jewish hatred of whites, etc. So whether a Jew moved from Germany to Australia or from Germany to America, he still hates whites. And that's exactly what happened in South Africa. All this German Jew garbage came here, and what did they do? They worked against the local whites, and they worked to destroy their power. They undermined them. They helped their enemies. I'll show you more of that later. You people have got a lot of garbage in your society, and you've allowed them to stay there, and they've constantly abused your free speech, your various other freedoms. And if you leave them for long enough, eventually they find ways to now start coming out and doing their next big thing. And it's like Henry Ford pointed out, where Henry Ford said that anywhere where there's some kind of evil going down, you'll find Jews there. And I think that in reality, the Jews do that because they also can't compete properly with whites. And they are willing to go and do dirtier, darker things in order to win. So then they go and they engage in ultra evil because they see that they can score big with this new level of evil. And all of these things come because they are familiar with your society, they feel comfortable, and they don't really fear you. And in history, fear plays a big role. I would say my own conclusion is you don't need to have other races to love you. In fact, love might even be the very wrong thing, the very worst thing that could happen. You don't want that to lead to miscegenation. What you want is you might want to be able to talk to them sometimes, but that's all that you need them for. If they respect you, that could be very good. If they respect you and you can talk to them and you can interact with them and they are willing to listen to you and do what you tell them, respect could work well. But if you can't get respect, then go for fear. Fear is much more important. Let them be deathly afraid of you. Because when they're really scared of you, they'll be very much on their toes. And then they are much less likely to take chances. I'm afraid that with these other humans, you are going to have to be tougher on them in a way that you would never do to your own kind. You don't want your own kind to fear you and to maybe quietly hate you. You want to get along with them. But when it's with these other races, even if the fear leads to hatred, that's fine. Fear is a very important thing. It keeps them under control. And I would say that if you have to choose between being loved or hated, or loved and feared, go with fear and hatred. History shows that that has the best outcome. The laws of America and the things that white Americans thought up were for a white society so that whites could live together and whites could be free and whites could be happy. Jews are just abusing that, and now they're bringing other human trash in to join them so that they can gain more power and you can lose more power. Every one of these pieces of human garbage that are coming into your country are taking your jobs, taking positions. In some cases, they're taking high-ranking positions or business positions and depriving some other white person of a good job or an important job. And they are depriving whites of a chance to do good things in America, replacing it with some other piece of shit who's going to do bad things, not only for America, but also for whites in America. But just keep this thought in mind about fear and respect and hatred. If you have to choose between respect, hatred, fear, and love, I would say toss love out the window and rather have any one of the other three or any combination of the other three. Because if you don't have that, these people are going to get out of control. And these people will come back to hurt you. They are animals. All humans are animals. And they will seek power. And when they get the chance, they will use that power. And the more power they get, the more ideas they will get. And all those ideas will be bad for you. I will try in other videos to show you better examples and to give you other thoughts on this. But I've got to warn you that you people are being completely misdirected by liberal thinking. Liberal thinking is total junk thinking, and it doesn't work, and it will not work in the long term. So just ponder these things, because it may sound extremely weird to you, but I cannot impress the importance of this. This is what has enabled nations and empires to exist and to survive for long periods of time. The Romans are a perfect example. The Romans didn't care about whether you love them or hate them. The Romans were confident of themselves, and if you made trouble for them, they'd come and kick your ass. And they'd smash your ass and kick you into line. And that system is the greatest system that has ever been created by whites. You will reach the top.
Give up, my friend. If you don't see the end, if you don't see the top, don't stop. We know you'll win. Every fight, you'll fight, every game.